Ah, I just love that. One of the highlights of the week. And I am going to pick the Raiders and Kirk Cousins to make the playoffs in 2026. How about that,
Wow.
Lindsay? How about that, Steve Kearney?
I didn't even know he was.
Approximately 7 months.
Yeah.
I didn't even know he was on the Raiders.
Yeah, I think he is anyway.
He is. He signed as a free agent. He's there to teach
Yeah.
Fernando.
Yeah.
Huh.
That's it. He's there to be a mentor.
Oh,
All right.
sure.
Speaking of mentors, Steve, you have definitely worked with people who are maybe new. You've been a guide for a long, long time, and I know there's the tried and true and the go-to when you take people out, but you are willing to break new ground as well.
Yeah, Steve, good afternoon, you and Lindsay. It's a little scary. I got on a lake this week with three guys, just bought a cabin on a lake up by Detroit Lakes. I've never been on the lake before, and I said, you know, I hope you have low expectations because I don't know if I can figure this lake out in one morning. I've never been on it. I had no idea what I was going to do, but I did get out, and immediately we started hitting these giant bluegills. It was an act of God. It was just like boom, boom,
Good
boom.
day.
It really was. And, you know, you don't want to beat up these big bluegills too much. You know, these are 9-10 inch fish that you really don't want to take a lot of the spawners out of a lake because those are very valuable fish. And so we kept 15 for four guys and just, you know, kept it cool and let a few go and then decided, hey, let's go find some crappies. So I went up on the north end of the lake. This is Cormorant Lake. And I kind of look at shorelines a lot. When I'm on a new lake, I look for high banks, high cabins that are up way high with a sharp break on shore. And that tells me that the break lines in the water is going to be fast and sharp as well. So
Sure.
I started on this north end, and bang, we were into the crappies immediately and caught some beautiful crappies. And, you know, I told them, this is not normal. This is not normal. This is luck. And we got into it, and it was a great morning, but we had a beautiful day for weather, no wind, and it was magical. It was awesome.
Now we've got a major change. The heat's going to move in, and we got a good old-fashioned late June, early July heat wave. It's going to be hot. It's going to be humid. It's going to be tough out there, and I'm sure it's going to change the bite.
You know, Steve, I don't know what's going to happen. This has
Okay.
been, you know, the most bizarre spring and early summer I've seen in decades. It's just been, you know, the water temperature is still at 60s, 65, 66, way behind. Now with the 90s, this is all going to shoot up into the 70s, and I have no idea where the fish are going to be because this is going to be a major change. The weeds are going to go nuts. Everything is going to go crazy. The water temperature will probably end up being middle 70s, low 70s. So, yeah, I'm a little worried. It is a drastic, fast change, which fish, you know, don't have a tendency to really like, you know, really fast. You know, we got some thunderstorms coming up here too tonight and tomorrow. So I don't know. This is just going to be a little bit of a dicey week. You know, they're talking rain almost every day and but yeah, it's I don't know till I get out there. I guess, you know, I just don't know how to predict anything because I've never seen, you know, weather like this ever.
Yeah, so we're going to be hot, humid, very unsettled. The way it looks through the end of the week, we don't really have a good read on what the weekend of the 4th is going to be like for sure. But yeah, it is very unusual. We've had certainly some rain here in the cities. I had almost a couple of inches in the rain gauge early in the week, and that certainly helps. I live along the Mississippi River, and now, while the river didn't take a huge jump, it always helps because, you know, you're in June and the current, the water levels feel like late August is really not a good sign. We could still use rain.
Yeah, people think with all the rain we've had that we're
Yep.
doing well on the lakes, but no, the levels are still down everywhere. But I think we might make up for it this next week. It looks like pretty good chances almost every day. I do want to tell you, I had this gentleman from Lakeville this week too. This is a different group, and he was in a walker. And when he got out of his car with his driver, we had to kind of put him on the dock on his butt and then kind of slide him into the boat. And I put him in the front seat, and we had a pretty good morning. We caught five crappies, probably the biggest five crappies I've ever seen. And they were just massive. And we were in a different lake this time. And this guy caught some walleyes, and he was so happy and so joyful. He caught the biggest crappie and the biggest walleye he's ever caught in his life. And that is why I do what I do, to see this joy and this fascination when people, you know, have a morning like that, just to be on the water and, you know, be able to accomplish this and catch some fish. I mean, it's so gratifying. It's really hard to explain, but it's the reason that we do what we do. And I got a beautiful text from his wife, you know, saying how, you know, just it was just a magical time. And, you know, again, I just it's such a grateful thing to be able to do that for people. That's why I just love to do it.
Yeah, for sure. Hey, Steve, this week we mentioned the heat and humidity building really starting tomorrow and then really sets in on Monday and temps in the 90s. Depending on where you're at, heat indices, central and southern Minnesota well into the triple digits. If you're going to be out, I would say early beyond that, take it easy. It's going to be a hot one.
Yeah, we've talked about that before. When you have temperatures like this, you got to get out at sunrise in the morning, 5:30, quarter to 6, and then get off by 10 or 11. And because it's so nice and hot, all the recreational people will be out in droves this week.
Right.
So it's best to get it done early because I think it's going to be really busy and really crazy with water skiers and everything because it is the week of 4th of July. So we'll deal with it like we always do.
Yeah, a lot of vacations this week. I know for most, a short work week. For some, no work week. A lot of people off the next couple of weeks. Enjoy. Be safe out there. Steve, always good to visit with you. Have a great 4th. We'll talk to you next week following the Twins and the Yankees. They'll be in New York on the 4th, so we'll visit then.
All right. Sounds great, Steve. You take care.
There he is, Steve Kearney joining us. SteveKearneyOutdoors.com. Quick break. We'll come back. Heather Rule will join us. The NHL entry draft. The Frost. I think we're done with the expansion draft in PWHL. How did all that sort out? Heather followed it. And by the way, huge motorsports fan, Indy Cars. She was at Road America with the family. We'll get an update on that as well. Local sports journalist Heather Rule joins us here on News Talk 830-WCCO. I will say, when I am on social media, the visitors from other countries coming to the States, commenting on life in the United States is amazing. I don't know about you, Lindsay, but I just got a kick out of it. Like the Scots in Boston and people visiting Walmart or Bucky's down in Texas. It's just a hoot.
Yeah, it has been. As somebody aptly put on the TikToks where I spend way too much of my time, they are enjoying our bread and circuses.
Yeah. You know, it's just kind of like the trips to the Walmart or Target or if you've never been to a Bucky's, it's just like the world's largest truck stops and they're down south. Or people eating Chick-fil-A for the first time or, you know, the gigantic portions or the free refills on soda and all of this. I get a laugh of it.
Did you see that whoever makes ranch created like a product for these people where they could travel with it home without getting dinged at TSA? Isn't that amazing?
I think Hidden Valley is like the originator of ranch, and now there's all sorts of other people. But to me, Hidden Valley is like the original. And for ranch, I'm kind of like, I prefer blue cheese or Thousand Island to be perfectly honest.
Western dressing only.
Yeah.
Full fat.
Yeah.
Gotta have it.
You know what's really good? Speaking of salad dressing, I don't know how we got on salad dressing, but Western's the red, right?
Oh, yes. A deep and red.
With blue cheese.
A little mix and match there.
Yeah. Little blue cheese and a little Western dressings. Pretty good. Especially with egg, bacon, mixture of lettuce. All really good stuff. Heather Rule joins us, local sports journalist. Heather, are you a big ranch person? Do you like ranch dressing?
I do. I am very much not a blue cheese person.
Oh,
at all.
Okay.
So
no,
that
no blue
anti
cheese.
Anti blue cheese. Okay.
Anti blue cheese. Yes, but I'm not. You know, I'm ranch in moderation. I don't need to put it on everything like some people do. I don't need to dip my pizza in ranch necessarily. I know a lot of people are big into that. You know, I also prefer a nice honey mustard too. And there's a lot of different variations on the honey mustards. And so, yeah, I like a good honey mustard, especially with chicken tenders. Yeah, good honey mustard.
What about ketchup? What about ketchup, guys? The true
ketchup.
Sauce.
Yeah, fries
of course,
for sure.
Yeah.
Always. Okay, I just wanted to make sure I wasn't doing radio psychopaths. So just wanted to
burgers. Burgers need ketchup. Fries need ketchup. But yeah, ranch. And that appears to be like one of the big things of this World Cup is the folks coming from wherever are just into the ranch. And then I've seen more than enough videos on people saying not only do they have ranch, but look at all the various size bottles and brands, etc. They are just overwhelmed by the ranch dressing available here in the States. Heather, there is a lot going on. I want to start with leisure, however, and you made a trip to Road America, IndyCar. I know you had fun. I saw a lot of posts, and I have heard this, that Road America is just a must-see, that it is a great time.
It is, yes. I have gone there many times. It's kind of a completely different experience from like going to the Indy 500 and the Indianapolis Motor Speedway. Obviously, they're two different racetracks. You know, one's an oval, one's a road course. But just very different experience, except you're seeing, you know, the Indy cars go around. But yeah, 4 mile course. You know, I wish they would do maybe another practice session or two, so you could go to a different spot on the around the track and see the cars go around. You kind of have to pick a couple of your favorites. They usually do like a practice session on Friday, and Saturday they qualify. They have the race Sunday. We checked out a different vantage point that we hadn't really been to this year to see them come around the course. And I think they're going like 175 miles an hour, and we're trying to get photos and everything. So, but they've opened up a lot more viewing spaces around that course the past few years, different spots you can go to and walk around the outside of the track. So it's a super fun weekend. We've done it a lot. It's always so much fun to just be over there, and the access to walk around the paddock, and you know, you'll be walking by, and we saw the cars getting rolled out to pit road before qualifying, and the cars are right there. You know, you'll watch them come through the post inspection there with tech and everything, and there's drivers walking around. So it's, as far as access, it's pretty cool too.
Yeah, and I don't know, NASCAR was there, what, 2 years in a row? And I don't think they're coming back this year, but NASCAR's been there and certainly open wheels. So there are a number of shows on that course every summer.
Yeah, it's IndyCar is usually the one we've been there for. But yeah, it's, which draws, you know, seems to draw more and more people every time we're there, which is awesome to see. And I heard the viewership on TV did pretty well, for the race Sunday, although I think maybe the soccer, lead up, into that lead in might have had something to do with it. But, yeah, it's, they draw a lot of different cars there for sure.
All right. A lot going on. Once again, a new gig, NHL.com.
Congrats, by the way.
The draft. And, of course, PWHL. And I wanted to start there before we get into the NHL draft a little bit. But, and that is, are they done? Is the PWHL expansion draft complete? Have players settled? Is this over?
Yes. So as far as kind of the expansion and the whole convoluted, complicated process, I think now we're kind of into that period where teams are able to sign, you know, free agents and players that are still unsigned. I think the Frost have, what was it, I think 14 players signed on their roster right now. So as far as the draft and, you know, kind of picking players away from other teams, you know, that aren't protected, that kind of thing, has settled down a little bit after the draft last week. The Frost took, you know, they got to pick each round, each of the six rounds. And obviously, I think Melissa Caruso, their GM, said it was no secret. You know, we were looking for a defender after, you know, expansion. They lost their top two draft picks from last year, from a year ago, including Kendall Cooper, who had an amazing season on the blue line. So Sarah Swiderski out of Ohio State was their first round pick at number nine. And, you know, with Wisconsin cleaned up in the first round of the draft to players out of Wisconsin, and Ohio State have been a couple of the top two programs, obviously, in women's hockey. So they, I think, got what they wanted there as far as the defender. They got three more forwards, another defender, and a goaltender they picked up in the draft as well.
Yeah, and a lot of interest in this area about Abby Murphy in the entry draft, if you will. So there was expansion, and now the entry draft, and Abby's going to be calling Seattle home.
Yeah, and I think, you know, it was exciting for it was, you know, once the draft order finally came out, I think it was, you know, obviously disappointing for Minnesota fans. I don't think, you know, there was going to be any shot, really, that Abby Murphy was still going to be on the board and fall all the way to number nine. So her going number two after KK Harvey going number one wasn't really a shock to anyone, but still really exciting to see Abby Murphy get drafted. You know, she was one of the, there's quite a few players with either, you know, Minnesota natives or Minnesota connections, played college hockey here, that went in the draft. So Abby Murphy, obviously. Edina had a couple players, Vivian Jungles, Jane Cool, Emma Peschel, who I thought was maybe a possibility for the Frost. She went to number seven to New York, out of Edina and Benilde St. Margaret's. Jamie Allison out of Andover got drafted. Grace Wolf out of Owatonna and St. Cloud State. So I think there were 10. I think Minnesota once again led the way as far as Minnesota natives with 10 picks in the draft. So always exciting to kind of follow, you know, some of those players around, know where they're going to be with, you know, up to, it's 12 teams now. You know, we've gone from 6 to 12 pretty quickly in this league.
Yeah, and we'll see, because it's certainly going to have an impact as the Frost have lost players in expansion, for sure. I would assume Montreal, the defending champs, are going to be impacted. So we'll see how all that plays out. Another thing I want to get into is the Wild. Bill Guerin, General Manager of the Year, quite an honor for Bill. Wheeling and dealing, the Quinn Hughes trade. And I think even though the Wild selected three players in the 2026 draft, that's fine and dandy. Typically, though, it's a while before you see any of these players impact the big club in any way, shape, or form.
Right. Yeah, I think the big news, obviously, was, you know, Bill Guerin, like you said, getting that GM award last night. And, you know, I think he had told the media, too, that just, you know, basically we're kind of happy with where we're at. Obviously, first round, you know, they didn't have a pick, and, you know, they did move up to with some trades to take the players they did. But nothing super slashy newsworthy there. I think everyone's kind of just waiting for the, hey, are you going to sign Quinn Hughes? Are they going to trade for Dylan Larkin? Everyone's just kind of waiting for those shoes to drop, possibly. And but yeah, Bill Guerin getting the GM award is obviously very exciting for the organization. I believe that's the first one the Wild have had win that award. So, you know, just really exciting for him. And obviously the Quinn Hughes trade, I'm sure, put him over the top on that award for sure.
Paul Fletcher is somewhere just super pissed off about him being going unrecognized. But I do want to ask you this, because we talked about this a couple weeks ago. Dylan Larkin requested trade from the Detroit Red Wings. Captain, been there for almost 10 years, never made the playoffs, was on the gold medal team with all the Americans who are all just requesting trades at this point. We saw Brady Tkachuk force his way out and make his way down to Florida. Not sure how that happens, but things are percolating. Sebastian Kosso, which was a first-round goaltender that they took the same year that the Minnesota Wild took Jesper Wallstedt, was moved yesterday. And so are you reading the leaves? And is it a possibility that maybe, I know everybody puts Wallstedt as the name to move, which I think would be an absolute disaster. But what about Gus? Could Gus be part of that package? Could that be something that Detroit could be interested in? What's your take?
I could see that. I agree with you. I think moving Wallstedt after the season he had and the playoffs he had, not to mention kind of the, you know, wrench into things is Gus apparently had an injury and we're not sure when he's going to be fully healthy and available ahead of this coming season. So I think that it could get interesting, but yeah, I think trading Wallstedt would just be just not great after the season he had. So I think, yeah, Gus could be, because I think that's part of what everyone's wondering is what are the assets that, what are the chips that Bill Guerin has that he can offer in return to get Dylan Larkin here? And I think Gus could certainly be a part of that.
All right, Heather, always good. We're tight on time because the Timberwolves have been busy. Chris Hines going to join from the Star Tribune in a little bit. But Heather, always good to visit with you. How do people find your work? What's the route to get to what you write?
Sure, it's Written Rule of Sports at .substack.com. And I had just kind of a recap of the Frost draft up there and just posted today a feature on Kelly Panik, just kind of putting a bow on her season as the forward of the year.
All right. Very good, Heather. Always good to visit with you. Thanks.
All right. Thanks so much. Good to talk to you guys.
Heather Rule joining us here on News Talk 830 WCCO. Quick break. We'll update the weather. Stormy and hot is the word for the upcoming week as we exit June and head for July. And then, as I mentioned, Timberwolves in the spotlight. Chris Hine will join from the Star Tribune later today. Twins and Rockies, game two of the three-game set. Great night for a ball game. At Target Field, our coverage begins at 5:30 with the lineup card here on News Talk. 830 WCCO. I've been there. 23 minutes down front of five. Twins and Rockies, they played a wild one last night. Twins had a 7-rip lead going to the eighth. They fell behind 8-7, win it 9-8 in 10 innings. It wasn't a work of art, but it was entertaining. Twins win. Same two teams tonight. Our lineup card begins at 5:30. Chris Hine joins us from the Star Tribune. Not a lot going on with the Timberwolves. We thought we'd say hello and see what's going on in Chris's world. I kid, of course. Chris, it has been an extremely busy week. Unbelievable to think that Naz Reid is now a Charlotte Hornet. I think a lot of casual fans in particular are having a hard time with that. People love this guy.
Yeah, it's going to be a tough one to take. It's one of those things that it's going to take a while to sink in, and then it's going to be like a grieving process almost. You know, there's going to be, you know, his first game back in Target Center, you know, watching him on TV, seeing him in a Charlotte Hornets uniform. All these things are yet to come, you know, kind of the same way when Carl Anthony Towns was traded. It'll be a huge, huge night at Target Center, I'm sure, when he comes back. But right now, it's really is processing, like, why did they make this move? And, you know, everything that they do, they process through the lens of how is this going to optimize the window for Anthony Edwards? And they came out of the last two postseasons saying, we lost in part because we did not have enough ball handling. We did not alleviate the pressure enough on Anthony Edwards offensively, and this was to go out and get LaMelo Ball was their solution. We will see if it works. It's a very polarizing move. obviously. And when you trade a fan favorite, there's a little pressure on you to really get it right.
Yeah, and Chris, a couple of things here. Number one, there's no way they could run it back. That what went on during the regular season, the fact that they were eliminated by San Antonio in round number two of the NBA playoffs, that they had to make moves. And when they sent Julius Randle on his way, I think hardcore fans, casual fans could understand that move. But then beyond that, what are the corresponding moves? You get the sense that this trade, Naz Reid, and getting back ultimately LaMelo Ball, is not the end of it for Tim Connelly.
Yeah, no, their roster is still incomplete, I would say. You know, right now they need to find, I think, who their starting power forward is going to be next season. But the thing is, they're a little painted into a corner, so to speak, in terms of the assets they have to go out and get another power forward, because they've given up all the first-round draft capital that they are eligible to give up. They have given up over the last couple of years here. So there's no more first-round picks to trade. So, you know, they received guard Josh Green in this LaMelo Ball deal. Do they try to flip him for a power forward? And if so, what's the kind of player that you can get there? So that's the number one question going forward the rest of the offseason here, is what do they do about the power forward position? We'll see what they come up with. They can round out the roster with the minimum guys as well, but they don't have a lot of room to maneuver in terms of, you know, ducking under the second apron of the luxury tax, and they don't have any first-round pick assets to deal anymore.
Yeah, and do you think that this move is kind of a reaction to the big injury to Dante DiVincenzo that kind of forces? Or do you still think, even if DiVincenzo didn't get hurt and was available, that they still make a move like this to get a player like LaMelo Ball? Because other names have been mentioned, you know, Ja Morant, et cetera.
Yeah, knowing what I know about how long the Wolves have wanted LaMelo Ball, I think they make this move regardless of DiVincenzo being healthy or not. You know, he was there for the Oklahoma City series. It didn't really make much of a difference in terms of the ball handling.
Sure.
Dante's a great player. He's going to be able to capitalize if he can get back from his injury later in the season. He's going to be a big weapon, I think, for this team, especially with LaMelo and Ant on the floor. LaMelo is somebody that this front office has been targeting and wanted for a long time. It was just a matter of, was he ever going to come available? Was Charlotte ever going to be willing to part with him? And the minute that they indicated they were, the Wolves were among the first on the phone to try to get him.
When you look at Anthony Edwards, and the thought is that he's likely been consulted. How much of a role do you get the sense that Anthony Edwards had in all of this, and how much do they communicate? And I know that varies player to player. I'm sure, you know, LeBron James in his day was consulted. I would assume with a superstar like Edwards, they keep him in the mix.
Yeah, Tim Connelly spoke about that after the first round of the draft, before he made the move or before they finished the deal. And there's a heavy amount of conversation and communication that goes on between Tim Connelly, the front office, and Anthony Edwards, as there should be. You know, when you're trying to build this franchise around Anthony Edwards, you want his input on what he's comfortable with or who he might like to play with. You certainly want to gauge his opinion. You don't want to let him be the ultimate decision maker. Like, that has probably shown throughout NBA history to be not such a good move.
Sure.
If a player gets that kind of power. But you certainly want to take his input and, you know, what he thinks he needs, especially when it comes to these playoff series against Oklahoma City and San Antonio. And, you know, over the years, listen, Ant has done a good job of dealing with all the defensive attention that he has gotten throughout his career. But I think when he gets double teamed, it still might irk him a little bit. He does a good job of dealing with it, certainly a better job of dealing with it now than than he did a few years ago. But you free up the floor for Anthony Edwards, and I think he could really open up the offense. He could open up his production, and that's what LaMelo Ball is going to do. I hesitate to think that a team is going to be double-teaming Ant the moment he gets across half-court the way the Spurs were. If he gives one pass and it's LaMelo Ball going 4-on-3 against the rest of the defense. Like, that, to me, is just going to force the hand of the defense to play them differently and play Anthony Edwards differently going forward.
Chris Hyatt joining us, covers the Timberwolves for the Star Tribune on the John Schuster Coldwell Banker Hotline. About LaMelo Ball, the shortcomings, number one, durability, and that's been well documented in the wake of this trade, talking about the fact he has been off injured. Now, this past season, a lot of improvement was available, but that certainly has to be a concern going into a deal like this. Availability is going to be very important.
Yeah, absolutely. And, that is, to me, in my personal opinion of this trade, the number one concern is durability for LaMelo Ball. I think from an on-court perspective, I can easily see the basketball fit between him and Anthony Edwards and the rest of the team. I think it will work, especially on the offensive end of the floor. But just how often is LaMelo Ball going to be available? Now, I do think that a decent number of the games that Ball has missed has been when Charlotte maybe hasn't exactly been trying to win some of those games. So you have to wonder if they were a competitive team in some of those years, trying for the playoffs, what have you. Maybe the games played number ticks up, right? Last year when they were a competitive team trying to make the playoffs, he played over 70 games. So that's a good sign, and a good sign trending forward. It is definitely something that the Wolves weighed in making the deal, and it's one reason why, bringing back Ayo Dosunmu was an important part of their offseason as well, to have that insurance, especially, as you mentioned before, DiVincenzo is also out. So making sure Ayo Dosunmu is there and backing up, Ant and LaMelo at the guard spot was an important part of this equation as well.
When you look at this group going forward, do you think the chemistry will change? Because a lot has been said. You talked about it when you joined us, that this was just a moody group. It just seemed to be an off year from that chemistry wise. With Julius Randle in Brooklyn and LaMelo Ball coming in and things being changed up, is that a huge factor going into this season, that maybe the mood around the team is different?
Yeah, no, 100%. It's, we'll see how that affects things. It's definitely something that they talked about as a team coming off of the offseason, and it's something that, everybody on the team was moody last year. It wasn't just Julius Randle. Right. Nas Reed, it wasn't just him, it was everybody at times contributed to that. And, it's just something about growing up and maturing, and I think last year, stuff isn't just going to get handed to you in a regular season. You got to go out and earn it. Even though they had been in the Western Conference Finals the previous 2 years, there was a sense that they could just cruise through the regular season. Guys could get their shots, not get their shots, and if they were not getting their shots, that was a problem for some guys sometimes. So it was kind of a constant toggle, between winning and making sure guys are getting theirs. And that's a lot of NBA teams, quite frankly. It's the battle that you have in the NBA when guys are playing for money, playing for contracts. And so I think at some point it's got to click in that you've got to sacrifice a little bit for the betterment of the team. And ultimately that also gets you paid in the NBA.
Chris Hyatt joining us. One more for you, and this is kind of a quickie. Any chance Rudy Gobert is moving on, or will Rudy Gobert be in a Timberwolves uniform this upcoming season?
I tend to think he's going to be in a Timberwolves uniform, unless there's another trade out there that brings in some sort of multiple front court tandem that the Wolves can play. I think, you know, I would be a little more surprised than not if he was traded at this point, just because I think right now you can look at this roster, and while there is a hole at power forward, they could fill that. A, B, you know, LaMelo's defense, he doesn't have the best reputation on the defensive end of the floor, but if you have a defense that's being anchored by Jaden McDaniels and Rudy Gobert, your defensive numbers should still be pretty good. So it would have to take, I think at this point, a pretty significant Wolves favorable deal for them to consider moving off from him, just because I think right now, as this team is currently constructed, Rudy Gobert fits what they're trying to do. I think what we saw in the playoffs the last few years, it's very tough for them to play offense when Julius Randle and Rudy Gobert were on the floor together, because the floor spacing gets clogged. When you have four guys in a lineup that can shoot, and Rudy's the only non-shooter on the floor, that eases things on the offense. And so right now, that's the direction they're headed, and Rudy Gobert can fit into that.
Chris, always great. Thanks.
Appreciate it, Steve. Thank you.
There he is. Chris Hine covers the Timberwolves for the Star Tribune. Great stuff. 10 minutes now in front of 5 here at News Talk, 830-WCCO. So is that the World Cup in a nutshell?
It's an all-timer.
Yeah, it is. Here's the thing. There was a lot of hand-wringing about the World Cup and would people come and ticket prices and so on and so forth. But it seems as though the people that have made the trip and are spending the money are having a pretty good time. Whether it's American soccer fans or our friends from around the world, everybody seems to be enjoying themselves. And that's cool. You know,
it's a nice reprieve. Yeah, it's a nice reprieve. Like, you're like, oh, people enjoying American culture. Maybe we're changing minds by them engaging with our community rather than just our politicians and political discourse. But,
But I think that's true. And it gets back to, and I think you and I have talked about this, that I believe in one thing. In general, wherever you're from, human beings are good. That there's a small percentage that are bad or you need to be wary of or are going to do bad things. But wherever you're from here on this planet, I think generally people are good. And, you know, there's been a lot reported on, well, you know, Americans are nice and it's such a big country and people are really cool and helpful and so on and so forth. And, wow, this has just been a great time. And I think when people travel wherever they're, I'm sure you found this down under, you know, when you went on your great adventure earlier this year. Just a lot of cool people everywhere.
Yeah, absolutely. And I will say, like, there's a lot of people coming here having a great time. We're also, like, keeping certain countries and the people that are trying to come from those countries out. Like, if you notice that, there, if you look at the numbers and all the things, there are still people who are not really allowed to come here and celebrate and watch their team. And so that exists underneath on top of all these other people that are coming from the countries that are enjoying everything that is great about America. So I'm happy, but we have to mention that there's still that undercurrent because it's always there.
Yeah, and that is a great point, that there's still an undercurrent around this World Cup, and there always is, particularly around World Cups, where it's like, yeah, you know, the behind-the-scenes corruption and the big money and the political influence. But when you get right down to it, most folks are good. And I believe that the vast majority of people just want to live their lives in peace and get along. Oh, we got to run. We'll get an update on the news. And then we got more. We'll count you down to the Twins and Colorado tonight from Target Field.